RTE 2FM. On Monday from 6, 2FM Breakfast.
With Carl, Roz and Aisling. Right now.
This is
2FM's Game On.
Well, a big thanks to Darren and the team for driving us into the weekend. It is Friday, August 1st. I'm Shane Dawson and you are listening to Game On. Coming up between now and the official chart show at 7pm, Alan Colley chats League of Ireland and journalist Dylan O'Connell details the ongoing unrest at Cork City Football Club. In Gaelic Games, Nadine Doherty previews the ladies' football final between Dublin and Mead, while Don McLean joins us from the Galway Races. Plus, Conor Neville is standing by to review all the big talking points from the week gone by. So if you want to get in touch, you can text 51552, WhatsApp 087 187 9200, or find us on X at GameOn2FM.
This is
2FM's
Game On.
Hello there, good evening. Welcome along to the show. Happy Friday, one and all. Happy Friday. Alan Colley, how's the form?
I'm great, Shane, and you?
I'm very well, Alan, as I always am of a Friday. Nadine Doherty, looking forward to a big match Sunday?
Yeah, very much so. Hopefully it'll be a good game, Shane. Looking forward to it. Nice to be here on a Friday.
Yeah, something different.
Mix it up.
We've pushed you back from your usual Wednesday slot. And you're going to be joining us on Monday as well.
Yeah, and I'm on RTE One on Sunday.
And you're on Sunday Sport.
Yeah.
So you're working hard
over
the bank.
Signed up.
That's dedication.
Flat out, Nadine. I love it.
And Conor Neville of RTE Sport Online. Game On debut, is it?
I think I might have been on it a few years ago.
Okay.
But the audience
before,
will remember. They'll
time.
Remember, I'm sure.
You will.
I love O'Connor.
Nadine, have you recovered from last week being the proud Donegal woman you are?
I've recovered, but jeez, I'd say the poor lads haven't, Shane. Just chatting there with Alan beforehand, it was just so disappointing. You have to give it to Kerry. Like, awesome performance. I don't think we'll see a performance like that again in a final in Croke Park for a long time. Hands down to them. Just everything went right. Everything they touched was magic. Donegal will have regrets for sure. I'm sure they'll reassess. But I think a few of the lads as well just froze on the day. Remember that Pat Gilroy saying they
started
were like...
Startled Earwigs.
And a few of the lads, you know, it just didn't happen on the day. And you look at games and you look at teams and on average, you know, two or three players just mightn't happen for them at all. But for Donegal, I felt there were six or seven. They just didn't get going. And even switches, you know, I just couldn't believe how Conor Moore was left on Joe Connor for so long. I would have brought Jason McGee on sooner. You know, the way Kerry deployed their midfielder, O'Shea, as a full forward, like a dummy full forward. And Donegal just didn't deal with that at all. And you kind of had Pat Ermogan sitting in there. And even from a height perspective, I know you had to mark him and somebody had to pick him up, but you felt push Pat Ermogan up on Paddy Clifford. You know, there were a lot of things. And it's easy for us to sit here in a studio. It's a lot harder on the day. But look, they'll reassess and they'll come back next year, I hope. And sure, in Donegal, the big hope is that the big man will come back. And Murphy will give us another year. There's no reason why not, I feel. I mean, looking at him this year in terms
He'll go one more year?
Well, like, his conditioning is immense. He stayed relatively injury-free. You know, he has his sports shop in Donegal. He works in ATU. You know, I'm sure his... Like, it's busy for everybody, but, I mean, he worked it this year, going on his performances. Had Donegal won at the weekend, Shane, he was player of the year. So why not? You know, why not? Like, he's 35. That's not...
Did he get seven in the final? Six. He got six anyway, didn't he?
He got eight. I think six.
Was it eight?
Six frees, two from play.
Yeah.
But I thought now, and I love him.
Yeah.
I thought it was the first time he looked a bit...
Yeah. A bit shaky.
Well, not shaky, just laboured.
Age catching up with him, Connor?
Which is only natural for everyone.
Potentially. I don't think he was the principal problem. I mean, they couldn't get hold of the ball in midfield. I mean, there was one moment early in the second half when he actually rose among a throng of Kerry bodies and got a touchdown on the ball. And then Gavin White is there picking it up, as he did continually. I mean, I don't know how many breaks he won, but it
deserved
incessant.
Yeah, Connor's right in that one as well, Shane. He wasn't by far the principal problem. I thought he's had an unbelievable year. I'm a huge fan. I'd love to see him back for another year, but I just thought, and maybe because the game is so dynamic now, that it just looked that way, kind of watching him live.
There was a suggestion he got caught on a couple of short kickouts that Kerry got the ball away quickly a couple of times in the second half.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, also, and we know from playing sport, you can go into games and sometimes you look a lot more heavy legged than you are, because it could be nerves, it could be the way the game was going. You freeze. And like, it's not like Michael Murphy to freeze, but I'm sure the way that game was going affected him psychologically. And sometimes you do get into that. You kind of fall into a daze or fall into a zone where you're a bit zoned out. And maybe that was why he looked laboured. But I mean, he can't go from being player of the year the week, 2 weeks before, to, oh, he has
But I think the labour thing is just purely down to his age and the time of his
career. Are we doing him a disservice that he is only 35?
No, I'm not. And I don't mean laboured as in as if he played really well. He scored 8 points. And when it came down to the freeze, when they were kind of having to just tip them over, he was the one. I know he missed one in the first half, hit the post. But as Nadine said, he's been brilliant all year. Mm. There was a lot more on the team that should be looking in the mirror more so than him that day. He didn't do anything wrong.
And he's redrawn the rules personally, so he doesn't have to traverse up the pitch the whole time.
He did that to save himself.
He did that specifically for that reason, so he might as well avail of it.
He was probably playing in the sandbox game in Abbottstown on Wednesday night, was he? Yeah. to try and make sure they get rubber stamped. 51552 is the text number. Football families, last night, Norty was brilliant. The real insight. Great to see League of Ireland sides doing well in Europe. Justin Ferdijai moving to Bray Wanderers. What a signing for the Wicklow club. Pity about Drogheda not being in Europe. Could help the league's coefficient even further, says a texter. Football families, or should we say association football families, or soccer families? Where do you stand on this, Alan Colley?
Football families.
Football families for you? Yeah. Even in Sligo, there's no debate.
Sligo Town, we were football, yeah. Sligo Town, you speak to any of my buddies, the heart of the town.
Sligo Town. So
our
producer, Adrian, who's shaking his head here through the window.
Adrian's not the heart of the town like
no,
me.
He's out more in the sticks.
He's in the posh end, Adrian.
Okay.
So us townies, and that's what we were known as, the townies. Merville United Football Club.
Without getting bogged down in a dispute over the demographics of Sligo, I know Alan's a bit of a fundamentalist about this, but I can say they were used fairly interchangeably.
In the Midlands?
In the Midlands. I mean, if you tended to play more Gaelic football, you would say soccer, and if you didn't, you know, football was automatically what you would do. So it was used as a means of differentiating it from Gaelic football. It's interesting, in England, I noticed, I mean, there was a time years ago where soccer wasn't the taboo word in England that it seems to be these days. And I would trace it back to the Americans and maybe USA 94.
Yeah.
Once the Americans started embracing the term soccer, obviously, to differentiate itself from American football, there seemed to be some reaction to that in England, and it became forbidden to use the word soccer in England. So because they rise up at you.
Yeah, I'd go along with that. That was the first I kind of came across, as Connor said, the differentiation. Yeah. And it seemed to stem back from the American stuff. But for me growing up, and then if you contrast that to me growing up with other sports, we'd say Gaelic. And you'd hear me now on a Monday analysing.
I hear you a lot on a Monday about the brilliant Gaelic football we've just seen.
And it's Gaelic. We would never use soccer in Sligo.
No. But it did originate as a term in English schools as a counterpoint to rugger. Soccer did. So, I mean, it's their term, but they object to it now. But I notice you say association football.
Yeah, now
that's very pate news.
I'm a traditionalist, Connor. Traditionalist. But that is also, I think, just an ongoing issue with our good friend Ruby Walsh, who I don't think enjoys the term association football.
Now, the way I've seen some people kind of getting very irritated by it today, it seemed online.
Mm.
It doesn't really bother me, like, to be honest, football, soccer. Yeah.
What, Northwest, Nadine, what was it?
Yeah, like, I would have played both, and it would be a Gaelic on a Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and you'd football on a Tuesday, Thursday.
So you'd football?
Yeah.
So you'd Gaelic and then you'd football?
I feel now, though, with kids, like younger kids, they use soccer. Like, there's a lot of my nieces and nephews, say, and my wife's nieces and nephews at home, and they play soccer or they play Gaelic.
Because Donegal is more of a Gaelic.
Well, no, this is Mayo as well.
Donegal is more of a Gaelic football stronghold than it used to be, maybe, I suppose.
Possibly, but soccer is still very big.
Yeah.
Excuse me, football. Yeah. Sorry, Alan Colley. Football.
51552. You're going to get harangued now on the text line, Nadine.
The football soccer is still, it's still massive up there, definitely.
What I will say is that soccer is the shortened-down terminology of association football.
Yes.
So
SOCC. Yeah.
So There, my point stands that it is associated football. And even some rugby fans might call that football. It's rugby football as well, or rugger, or union as well, if you want to get into that, but however. Lots of tangents to go down. Speaking of rugby football, You're looking forward to the Lions test. You had a nice article on the RTÉ Sport
website. Well, I don't know if I'm looking forward. I haven't really watched it that much. But nonetheless, that does that does not stop me opining on about it in the round. No, I mean, I suppose I was just writing about it. I've noticed the Aussies are getting increasingly miffed at this rhetoric that they're no longer worthy of a Lions tour. And you're hearing a lot of that kind of rhetoric. There's been a sense throughout it that if they didn't show up, you know, they were kind of unnoticed, the Aussies, that if they didn't provide the Lions with competitive fixtures, you know, this could be the last time. And they just go back to the old dispensation, which was the case for most of the 20th century, where they just went between South Africa and New Zealand and they might play the Aussies while they were touring New Zealand in one game.
Mm. And they gave them a good game last
week. Yeah, they did, exactly. And it's been kind of a moral victory for the Australians that they pulled it off, because they've had a dreadful few years and the game is in trouble in Australia in lots of respects and needs some help. I mean, it's a very sort of narrow social strata that play it in Sydney and Brisbane, and league is a much more popular sport in that part of Australia, and then Aussie rules has a kind of control of Melbourne. So...
Mm.
Yeah, they need all the help they can get, I think.
Does it still have sporting significance, or is this just a really
This is the point. I mean, part of it is that I'm not sure how many people actually... I mean, there are some, no doubt, who care whether the Lions win or lose. I mean, what the Lions is about is spectacle and, you know, a grand contest. So that's why the Lions tours that people remember in modern times, or maybe South Africa 09 or New Zealand in 2017 when it was a draw. So it has to be tight and it has to be a sort of massive ask for the Lions. If they're going there as heavy favourites, it's kind of, it's not, you know, they're playing a nation that Ireland would expect to beat on their own. So,
well, but their world rankings are below both Ireland and England.
Yeah.
So that kind of says a lot. Can ladies football take a bit from the marketing? And because we're hoping for a big crowd on Sunday at Croke Park for three finals. You have the junior final, intermediate final, and indeed the senior final between Dublin and Meath. And you look at the job Lidl have done in particular with an advertising campaign to increase eyeballs on ladies football, that perhaps Camogie hasn't reached that level?
Yeah, I think that's fair, but it comes down to money, Shane. And Camogie probably don't or didn't have the financial backing that the LGFA did with Lidl. But I was just talking about this today, you know, with that Lidl campaign, while, yeah, it was good and it raised awareness, you know, I think what the LGFA are possibly missing out sometimes is, you know, they're not marketing the sport as, you know, come and watch this great sport. There's a lot of, you know, that ad in particular, I suppose it's nearly a guilt trip in a sense. Mm. So I think in that case, you know, take, for example, Carla Rose back heel two weeks ago in the semi-final. I mean, that it was all over Twitter, okay. The LGFA could have done so much with that. You know, look at Vicky Wall. We talk about her every single week. Get her up there. You know, get her on social media. Approach her in an official capacity. So I think from that regard, we're just not marketing our players enough. And I think across the season as well, like we speak about this every week, you know, attendances are always down. I think they just have to look at a different way. They do, because even you look at the LGFA social media, which is free, it's never really that active, Shane. You know, so yeah, of course you can learn lessons from a massive big Sky Sports marketing company like the Lions. And I felt this weekend it's been quiet. I mean, it's been quiet on all fronts. And the tagline this year for the final is "It's not just the final." But that's, what does that even mean? You know, we know that the LGFA do a huge amount of work in the background, absolutely, and it takes so much to get to what's going to happen on Sunday. But it is the biggest day in the calendar year for them by far. And, you know, it's always the biggest crowd by far. So you have to push that on more and more. And I don't think they are. And, you know, I'm often accused of possibly being a bit critical, but even that tagline.
It was curious because the LGFA had been very effective at marketing it in the 2010s. The crowds had increased exponentially in those years, but it does seem to have stalled.
Yeah, I suppose kind of they came from such a low baseline. I feel what, you know, you look at where Meath were in 21, 22, when Meath won that final in 21, that was an ample opportunity to really, really push it on, because, you know, it wasn't Cork, it wasn't Dublin. There was a brand new team. You still have these superstars. And I just think you look, you know, I feel you could compare it more to the FAI, to the women's soccer, when they were on their upward trajectory and they got to the top. Like, that was marketed very, very well. And I just think we've plateaued again. I mean, last year there were 30,000 at the final, Shane. You know, I mean, that
What are we expecting this year?
Probably 45.
Okay.
You know, Dublin and Meath are there, so they bring massive crowds in
themselves. What's a realistic expectation, would you say?
Well, like, I was looking this week. There's 29,000 registered members in Dublin LGFA. There's, I think, 11,000 in Meath. Population of both counties combined is 1.6 million. Out of that, how many teenage girls are there? Girls playing football. Like, there's an expectation to fill it. Like, people laughed when Brian Molloy said, oh, you know, the Camogie could fill next Sunday. I don't know if they will, but I think, like, why not aim for that?
Is it well priced?
Oh, yeah. And I mean, there's it's brilliantly priced. I think a ticket's about 20 euro. And there's tickets go out to clubs, there's family tickets. I mean, it's very well priced in that regard. And I just think, like, why not aim for that? Yeah. Because if they're happy sitting at the 50,000 all the time, if that's your aim, you're not going to surpass that.
Oh, no, the reason I ask, and I would agree with you, is because it's the equivalent of us, Shane, I suppose, with the FAI Cup final. Mm. And you mentioned there, it's your big day, it's your showpiece day, it's the one day you get primetime TV or whatever in Croke Park, the same way as we get the Aviva Stadium on a Sunday for the whole day. So you have to take, you have to capitalise on that massively. And as you say, if you're only aiming for 50, you might only get 30. Whereas if you aim for 80, you might get 65.
That's it.
You know?
And we'll see how Camogie goes. And I think, you know, and Brian Molloy was right in saying that, because how many people came out over the skirts and, like, we're not going to go back to that. But the whole country was up in arms.
Yeah.
And
word enough.
Exactly. And so many of us made that point. If every single person who had an opinion on the skirts went to one Camogie match since that happened, sure, you'd have half full stadiums the whole time. So, yeah, but I think, Shane, it comes back to the game as a whole, and we will discuss that, I suppose, later on. I think things have to improve on the pitch if you want to really attract people into the games. And I suppose for women's football this year, I mean, compared to the men's, like, the men, like, the championship was unbelievable, and we were just made look so average. So maybe down the line, the LGFA would be open to some kind of rule changes or, you know, something to just make the game.
Is the game stagnant?
Oh, definitely. Definitely. And you have 40 AFL players, you know, your best players in Australia. And that definitely has an impact overall. But I think we just have to market what's happening on the pitch, and we have to improve what's happening on the pitch. And that has to go back to grassroots level. It has to go back to coaching. Because what I find this year is that we have now turned our game into the old men's game. There were so many blanket defences this year, especially in lower levels, and that comes down to coaching. That's not players deciding to do that. So, you know, there is scope there, and you can learn from what's worked. You know, you look at that, like, the men's season this year was unbelievable. Mm. That's what I was saying. Alan Colley every Monday, highlight of the weekend.
Gaelic was unbelievable.
It's 30 euro for a ticket for the ladies' football final, 15 euro for juvenile students, OAPs, and just on the Ticketmaster website, briefly looking, 30 euro for Lower Hogan, Lower Cusack on the Ticketmaster website at the moment for the Camogie final as well. And that's from the ladies' Gaelic website as well, the 30 euro, 15 euro.
And Shane, to add to that, like, all former players, like, the men's final, they get two tickets, or, you know, get. So if you know an ex-county player who isn't going to the game, there's probably tickets there that you can use. So,
okay. Okay, it's one to keep an eye on. We will be previewing the final in detail a little bit later on. Connor, you're going to stick around. Alan, you're going to stick around. And Dylan will be joining us. Dylan O'Connell, Cork-based journalist, to detail what is happening with Cork City Football Club.
Game on.
Association football.
Now, you're very welcome along to our association football chat on Game On. Alan Colley, Connor Neville and Dylan O'Connell will be joining us shortly. Just to mention as well, we're talking about the promotion of women's sport. Athlone Town continue their pursuit of advancing in their UEFA Women's Champions League as they take on Croatian champions Agram in the first qualifying round tomorrow. Athlone, of course, beating Cardiff City to begin with in Group 5. If they overcome Agram on Saturday, they will face Icelandic champions Breidablik in Round 2. The game will be available to watch live on LOI TV, but fans are encouraged to show their support for Athlone Town by securing tickets online on the Athlone Town website for tomorrow, with the kickoff at 4 p.m. Elsewhere, League of Ireland. Stephen Bradley's comments, Alan Colley, that he believes the FAI must address the ridiculous length of the League of Ireland season, with the Shamrock Rovers boss stating the part-time First Division clubs are holding back professional Premier Division sides by preferring a shorter campaign. Where do you stand on this debate?
I would agree wholeheartedly with him. to be honest with you, Shane, because you're looking for progression all the time. And when you see the likes of Shamrock Rovers and what they are achieving and what they've achieved in recent seasons, you look at Shelburne in Europe now at the moment, Drogheda should have been there, St. Pat's as well, getting through a couple of games, couple of rounds. We're always trying to progress the game and move it forward. You see all the Premier Division clubs are full-time now, so huge progression in that. And he's making the point that the First Division teams, part-time teams effectively, who I have sympathy for in a lot of situations, Shane, because I don't think there's enough emphasis and focus on a lot of the First Division teams, and they're cast aside and all the focus is always on the Premier Division, which I don't agree entirely with either. But you can't have Premier Division, or you can't have First Division teams, as Stephen said, part-time as well, a lot of them, in every which way, dictating how the Premier Division and the progression is kind of going and the direction in which it's going. So I would agree wholeheartedly with him. But I'd also have huge sympathy for the likes of the First Division clubs. And I think you had the chat with Paul here last week about, obviously, the introduction of the third tier. And Paul was totally against it. And I would agree totally with Paul on that as well. Why don't they focus heavily on looking after and trying to help the First Division clubs, who a lot of them are struggling, to get them onto some sort of level in where they're not going to get to the same level as what the Premier Division clubs are, but at least put them kind of on that pathway some ways towards that, Shane, before you start introducing some new clubs. So I would agree with Stephen Bradley totally. And the off season is far too long, and then when you're cramming in games like at the moment now, the whole idea of bringing the teams that are in the basically in Europe playing all those games on the Monday night, like we've already seen, and I know the draw of the situation is unique, but they had no league game, only one league game I think in July. So you have a situation now where we've games this weekend, there's only two games tonight we're going to focus on. I know there's a game tomorrow night, there's a game Sunday, but you want the match nights to be like as they've always been, consistently as much as you can, which are five games on a Friday, or at least four games on a Friday, whatever the case may be.
Now, there were comments from FIFA hinting at mandatory 72-hour breaks between fixtures and as an attempt to address player welfare concerns that could have a knock-on effect for Ireland, where Friday, Monday turnarounds are frequent. Like, League of Ireland clubs, Connor, are operating off 52-week contracts. I'm aware there's financial reasons lying behind clubs favouring a shorter season, particularly in the First Division. I think Shane Keegan made a very good point that you can put money into a First Division club, you can go to get promotion, you can go to the playoffs. If you don't get that, you might ship off a few of your high earners and then you just reset, because you know there's going to be no relegation, there's going to be no repercussions in that regard. But for the fans of the coefficient in the League of Ireland, should we be doing more to support League of Ireland clubs in Europe?
Certainly see Bradley's point, I mean, in the sense of this business of, because the off-season is so long and they have so many games to get through, you have this situation where they're cramming Monday games, Friday games. It's incredibly intensive, and it can't be easy when teams are trying to strive to make it in Europe, which is really what the prime focus almost, I suppose, of the likes of Shamrock Rovers and Shelburne at this point is. Now, having said that, I mean, Shamrock Rovers had barely an off-season at all last year because they went so deep in the Conference League, so his players didn't get much. I think they must have only had a few weeks of an off-season, really. But yeah, you can definitely see his argument. Are you cutting a portion of the First Division clubs adrift? I mean, it definitely is a rich get richer kind of.
And you're only going to create a bigger divide.
Create a bigger divide, because some of those First Division clubs are struggling as it is, and this is a... The shorter season is kind of a sort of life belt for them that they can get off with, sort of lessening their wage bill. But, you know, there's different priorities there.
But is the priority of, is that how we better League of Ireland football is going Europe? Or do we need more? We need a more geographical spread.
Could you have a different Premier Division season to the First Division one? Do they need to be aligned in that way?
Yeah, you could start them, like, at the moment where the Premier League is 3 weeks out, I think, or 2 weeks out.
Yeah, the 16th of August.
Yeah. Whereas League One, League Two in England is all starting tomorrow. And they play loads of games. Obviously, they're going Saturday, Tuesday for chunks of the season, as are the Championship. And they start 2 weeks out from the Premier League. So I'm sure the First Division could do something like that and still kind of... You can still allocate fixtures towards that. It's coming up to the playoff towards the end of the season, which is obviously a big thing for the First Division clubs. I just don't think there's enough emphasis on the First Division clubs, and that's from everyone across the board, FEI, media, everyone.
Yeah.
And I look at clubs like, and I've said this numerous times, clubs like Athlone and teams like that with huge history and pedigree over the years, cast aside basically.
Oldest club in the League of Ireland, Athlone Town.
And I would always focus, and I've said this, it's gone back a long time now. I know it's moved on a lot since, in terms of the Premier Division. I just made the point that they're all full time. But I would go a bigger league and try and bring three or four of them clubs with you. Now, if there's two or three that you can't see any way that they're going to increase, I suppose, people coming to the games, whatever the case may be, finances, resources, whatever it is, that you just can't see anything for them at the moment, let them go into what the tier has been kind of introduced, that third tier, and make that something of a new kind of thing. Whereas if you had a Premier Division with the 10 at the moment and you brought four or five or even six First Division clubs who you could feel, because I know for the likes of Finn Harps or these kind of clubs, if you had Shamrock Rovers or Shelburne in the current guise that they're in and how good they are, coming to Ballybuffet, one, and everybody knew they're only going to be there once a year rather than this three times a year, four times, the fixtures that we have at the moment. There's too much familiarity, I find, with the Premier Division clubs when you're playing teams, obviously, four times a season, which is ridiculous in my eyes. That if you had 15, 16 clubs and you were only playing them home and away, so it's 31 games, and those clubs, the likes of an Athlone or the likes of Finn Harps or whoever the case may be, if they were able to kind of, there was an audit and there was that they were able to tick box to say, we can cater for the likes of that, and we see future projections of us increasing everything and moving forward with the Premier Division clubs, I know you'd get huge crowds into Ballybuffet to see a Shamrock Rovers or a Shelburne. Whereas at the moment, they're probably getting, would they be getting 800, 900, 1,000 into the games? Yeah, yeah. So there's no real way of them ever growing anything. And I think there should be some sort of emphasis. As much as I'm with Stephen Bradley on that, and as much as I'm with move forward, the Premier Division clubs, move the whole thing forward, because we can't kind of stay stagnant or we can't kind of go backwards. We have to move the things forward. But I think there should be some sort of help put towards those clubs as well, because they're dying. They're dying on their knees at the moment.
Is the regularity of the Dublin Derby is not a big benefit for the, from the point of view of those clubs? Or are they, do they play each other too much? Is
too right? much, I would say, Connor. And I'd say if you were to ask
it's a benefit financially because you're guaranteed a sellout, and that brings in conversation facilities that we should have bigger grounds. But there is too much of a familiarity and you're playing too hard. And I think it's disheartening that you'll see Finn Harps and that beautiful terrace at the back of the goal will be full if they have a big match in the semi-final. Similar in Longford Town, that stand will be full if there's a big match. Athlone Town, Lizzie Woolen. It was sold out for the Women's Champions League during the week as well against Cardiff.
And my point on that, Shane, then all of a sudden revenue is being generated for those clubs that was never there. And all of a sudden they might be able to put in a new stand. They might be able to do something better with the pitch.
Well, there's an ongoing issue with the wall in Longford Town as well, that they have GoFundMes and everything.
Whereas so if you kind of focus on them at the moment and you look in at the clubs, like, they're struggling, and that's, I don't think that's right either, as much as I would agree with Stephen's comments.
Well, one club struggling at the moment is Cork City. They're in turmoil at the moment. Dylan O'Connell, Cork-based journalist, is with us now. Dylan, you might just lay out the situation now. We could be here to past 7 o'clock if we were to get into every facet of it, but what is happening at Cork City and why is there so much unrest?
Yeah, like, it's, again, like you said, there is a lot there. They're currently bottom of the Premier Division. There is 11 points adrift of Sligo Rovers, so there is a real fear of relegation there. And as far as I know, through social media and Twitter, there's a planned protest outside Turner's Cross this evening against what's going on at the club at the moment. The men's team have only recorded 2 wins all season. The women's team have only recorded 2 wins all season, the women's Premier Division. So there's a lot going on, and not for a good reason. And it's not, it's another season where there's a lot going on, but not for a good reason.
There seems to be a lot of miscommunication, perhaps. So there's stories that certain players are refusing to play, and then there's statements being released that they were available, that the club didn't select them, and now they've got rid of Jeek Steele and Mbeng, and Mbeng going to Shelburne. And there's a lot of, I suppose, fake news, for want of a better term, going around, because there's a lack of clarity. So why is there so much frustration at the moment from Cork City fans towards Dermot Usher and the ownership?
It's the fact there's been a cycle. So if you look back when the club was originally relegated in 2020, there were issues financially with the club. It's well documented the club nearly went bankrupt. There was issues with getting a license. That's all well explained. That's all in the media. They got relegated in 2020. There was that emotional comeback in 2022, and then they brought in the takeover to Dermot Usher. So it was a fresh start for the club after what happened, and then they went down in 2023 after losing the playoff, which, again, it's one thing to lose the playoff, it's another thing to get relegated, and then to lose to Waterford, who will be considered one of City's rivals and its derby. So this year was kind of billed as, look, the club learned from mistakes, that they were working their way back. Like last season, they signed Sean Murray to a long-term deal, Sean Maguire came back to a long-term deal, the same with Rory Keating. And things haven't worked out this season, but they haven't worked out spectacularly. And it's very much of, like, the quarterback bet, I'm steeped in so much blood, might as well keep going, can just keep getting worse, and the whole atmosphere around it is quite negative at the moment. And what makes it worse is the club don't seem to have any luck as well at the same time. Like last week, Cottle O'Sullivan, one of the most promising young players in the Premier Division, suffering a long-term injury. So there was a lot going on there, and that's just, it's all combined to create that negative and that negativity, and with that then is just this thing that's spiralling, almost snowballing, just for want of a better term.
Okay, just finally, just to wrap this up, then you mentioned they've learned from past experiences, but correct me if I'm wrong, the club have been relying off loans since 2020, and has that short-sightedness now not just caught up with the club?
Yeah, like my own opinion, it has, because again, what you want as a supporter and what you want to see from any team really is a stable foundation and a solid 11 from week in, week out. Like, I think during the 2023 season, they had 5 starting goalkeepers at one point. This season, they brought in the goalkeeper Truce from the Netherlands on a loan deal. It was the same thing. And it's just, it's one short stop to another short stop. There's no stability there. There's no long-term planning. And that shows when, like, Daniels came in on loan. He was a striker. He scored against Drogheda United on the Maybank Holiday Monday. And again, it was a player that suited the club. But again, it was a short-term deal. He was gone at the start of July. He's got over in Scotland now. And it's these short-term deals because, again, players don't hit the ground running. Players, you know, come to a club, they have to acclimatise, get used to the surroundings. And it's a lot of that's combined, but that's the way that's the story of things in Turner's Cross since, I'm going to say, even 2019.
Okay, just very briefly, you mentioned the protest. What sort of numbers are you expecting in that report of protest this evening?
To be brutally honest, I don't know, because it was all organised and mentioned on social media through, was it a Twitter account saying Cork City Supporters Club? And again, though, there's lots of groups, there's lots of people have their own little groups in Turner's Cross. There could be 20 people, there could be 50 people, there could be no one there. It's very hard to gauge these things. But again, one thing which I would say is, what do people protesting actually want for the club? Because again, people aren't happy with the owner. Does that mean they want the ownership out? If they want the ownership out, that means someone has to come in. Again, there's a lot of questions there, but it's a protest with a very ill-defined reason behind it. Their frustrations are valid. Don't get me wrong there. When you see a club from Ireland's second biggest city facing its third relegation in 5 years, but again, there's been no clearly defined goals from a group like that or a protest like that.
Okay, great stuff. Dylan O'Connell, thank you so much for detailing all of that. City play United this evening, or Cork play Galway, whichever you may prefer in that regard. Just very, very briefly, Alan Colley, Bows against Drogs. I hate the term Drogs. I'm just Bohemian Football Club against Drogheda United. Drogheda, they've been away in Spain for a while, so how is that going to affect them coming in? I was going to say coming in a bit cold, but not coming back from Spain.
No, well rested, Shane, to be honest, so you'd expect a big performance from them. They had a good week's training over in Spain, as you said, so I would expect a big performance from them. But unfortunately for them, tonight they're coming up against the Bohemians team, who've only lost 1 in their last 9, and they're in red hot form, scoring plenty of goals, so it's going to be a tough nut to crack for Drogheda. But the one thing that's in their favour going into the game is that Drogheda is the only team that Bohemians haven't taken any points off this season, so they've done very well in the games against them, so that will give them confidence. It's second v fourth. Bows, obviously, you're trying to put pressure on Shamrock Rovers if they were to win, and it'll bring it back to 4 points. We were all predicting here a few weeks ago that the title race is over. If they were to win and bring it back to 4, Shamrock Rovers are playing Derry this weekend, and something will have to give in that one, and everybody from a neutral point of view will be hoping that Derry can maybe take some points off Shamrock Rovers, and all of a sudden we may have a title race on our hands. So I think it's a tough game for Drogheda. I think Bows will beat them.
Okay, great stuff. Alan Colley, I'll see you on the showgrounds tomorrow night. Thank you very much for your company this evening. Longford Town against Cove, big one, Connor.
Yeah,
you're confident?
I don't have any Shakespearean references to throw in here. As you know, things are going bad if that's been... That's surfacing. Yeah,
right.
They've turned around a bit lately. You know, it was a grim start to the season, but they're slowly climbing up.
Slowly climbing up.
I mean, it's very hard to miss out in the playoff spot in the first division.
They might just do it, though, Connor. Who knows? Listen, Connor, thank you so much for popping in. Alan, thank you. Also, we will be chatting to Don McLean a little bit later. But up after the break, we're going to chat ladies football with Nadine Doherty, previewing the big one, Dublin against Meath.
Game on.
Ladies football.
Now, Nadine Doherty is here with us to preview Dublin against Meath as they go head-to-head at Croke Park on Sunday. This year's All-Ireland Ladies Football Final, a repeat of the 2021 decider, where Meath surprised Dublin to win the Brendan Martin Cup for the first time. That victory saw Meath end the Dubs' quest for 5 All-Irelands on the spin. We were speaking earlier in the show about the marketing, and hopefully it is a great crowd on Sunday. Paula Cunningham of Monaghan texts in, 51552 is the text number. Totally agree with Nadine, and this is earlier on in the show, on the promotion and marketing of LGFA. Each year there's a huge drive for the final, but what about the semi-finals, quarter-finals, etc.? A lot of the crowd go to the game because the venue is Croke Park. They need to go back to the drawing board. We are falling behind, sadly, and it is unfortunate. Hopefully there is increased crowds in the Championship and in the league itself. For this match itself that we hope will be have a big crowd, was this an expected or unexpected final pairing?
For me, personally, unexpected, and I'd imagine most people around the country would agree with me. When the semi, we spoke about the semi-final, Shane, and it was no surprise the four teams who made the semi-finals were there. But I was talking that week of the semi-finals to people, and I just said out of the four teams left, Meath would have been the team to surprise me if they win the All-Ireland, if that makes sense. So, you know, Dublin, obviously, Galway, Kerry, they would have been the top three at the start of the year. Yeah, surprised that Meath are there, but Meath are there because Vicky Wall has committed to Meath since January. It's not that they're a one-player team by any means. They have other very important people in there. But I just look at Meath this year overall, and it's obvious that what she brings to a changing room, what she brings to a training pitch, what she obviously brings to a football pitch when we watch her play is massive. Mm. And it's just no coincidence that she hasn't had IRFU this year. She hasn't had AFL yet. She'll probably be gone next week. But yeah, I personally think that's why Meath are in Sunday's final.
Yeah, it's interesting actually. There's a lot of talk about players leaving for Australia. We had Jennifer Dunn, Grace Coss go early. And then you have Sinead Goldrick, Eilish O'Dowd, Vicky Wall, even Cleary, he'll be heading on to Australia shortly, all opting to stay and represent their county. So it's good that they have stayed on, but obviously unfortunate that we are losing them to Australia. In terms of past meetings, a double barrel question for you. Will the Leinster final in May that Dublin won have much bearing on Sunday? And also, even going back further, will Dublin still be hurting, and albeit there is a bit of player turnover, with Meath stopping that 5-in-a-row bid in 21?
Yeah, so since 21, Meath have only beaten Dublin once. They beat them the following season in a Leinster preliminary game. They beat them by a point. And I think the teams have played between in Leinster Championship probably and league probably 8 or 9 times since, and Dublin have won them all. The Leinster final was an interesting one, Shane. I don't think players will get hung up on that. But if you're looking at it, I suppose, from Sunday's point of view, I mean, Meath played Croke Park very well that day in patches. Their counter-attack in football, they played that to perfection. They used the space. But more concerning for me, from a Meath perspective, I suppose, is the fact that that last quarter, Dublin scored 8 points without reply. Some people would feel maybe it was fitness, and Meath are fitter now. Of course they're fitter, but Dublin are fitter. But if you look at the Dublin starting forward line that day, out of the 6 forwards who I would expect to start the game this week, only Hannah Turrell and Niamh Heatherton played the whole game. Carla Rowe came on at halftime. Kate Sullivan came on at halftime. Orla Nolan didn't play. Nicole Owens didn't play. You know, so there's a lot of quality coming into that Dublin forward line. So Meath will be aware of that. And more importantly, that day, while there was only 4 points in it, and yes, Meath had moments where possibly they could have kicked on and won the game, there was a spell in the first half, the first 20 minutes. Dublin had 4 or 5 goal chances. They had a goal chance on almost every second attack, and they just overplayed it. So they're going to be looking at that and analysing that. And if they're, I suppose, if they don't overrun it and they're better with their passing, they could run in a few goals. Although Meath will be, you know, you look at Meath and their whole game, Shane, is built on that defensive structure. So they'll also look at that. But look, in terms of a psychological, absolutely not. I think these two teams are around long enough that past games are past games. You learn, you move on, and that's it.
Key battles and matchups. Is it too lazy of a narrative to just assume that who's ever bigger players play better will win it? Your Hannah Tyrrells, your Vicky Walls, your obvious names. Or is it going to be a bit more intricate in the tactical battle?
Yeah, well, I think with Meath, we spoke, Katie New, their cornerback, who's probably been their best defender all year, suffered a really bad injury in the semi-final. I'd be very surprised if she plays this final, Shane. And she would have been there, you know, one-to-one marker. She probably would have picked up Hannah Turrell or Kate Sullivan. So you're looking at that Meath full back line now, and you're thinking, who is going to match up? So I don't think Meath will overly focus on that. I think they'll just play deeper. I think they'll bring bodies back. So it won't get into a tactical battle in that sense on their regard. I think with Dublin, the obvious person who they'll probably want to pick up is Vicky Wall. But in the last three meetings this year, it was Grace Cott who picked her up, who's now in Australia. So a lot of people's choice would be Sinead Goldrick. I think Dublin would be foolish to use Sinead Goldrick on Vicky Wall because they've tried it before. It hasn't really worked. And also, you're losing a massive, massive player in attack there with Sinead Goldrick. So the obvious choice then after that is possibly Ailish O'Dowd from midfield. She could track Vicky. Or listen, Dublin, I'd be surprised if they did this, but Dublin could just flood that middle with four or five players and not go one-on-one on Vicky, but I imagine they will.
Do you need to suffocate Vicky Wall?
Oh, you need to do something.
Yeah. But even if it takes out one of your key players from a Dublin perspective.
Yeah, I think so. And I'm just saying I wouldn't go for Goldie because it just hasn't worked in the past. And I think they'd be foolish to try it again. I just think pace-wise, Vicky has far too much and she probably is too strong in terms of her physical strength, whereas O'Dowd probably matches up a little bit better in that regard. But I think what you'll, regardless of who Dublin put on Vicky, I think what you will see every time she gets possession is a mass of Dublin players going to her and trying to smother her in that regard. I think in terms of matchups then, and again, this is why I suppose I favour Dublin a little bit, is if you look at players outside of Vicky Wall who have been very influential for Meath, I think the matchups, just in terms of positional matchups, if they do materialise, I think Dublin have the edge in all of them. I think Niamh Galgally at centre forward, she's been excellent for them in terms of ball carrying. I think she'll have a tough day at the office with Martha Byrne. Marion Farley in midfield has been really good from distance. She's kicked a lot of scores from distance, but I just think the physical presence of the Dublin middle third could limit her in terms of getting up the pitch to pop over those long range points. Keira Smith, who has been an unbelievable, I think she's only 21 or 22, phenomenal player this year for Meath, absolutely brilliant at wing forward. You're looking at her possibly being on Goldrick if Goldrick doesn't pick up Vicky Wall. And then, I mean, their biggest star then inside, Emma Duggan, she's going to be matched up with Leah Caffrey. And
what a battle.
What a battle. And I mean, that's gone. That's fairly even in terms of who's won that battle in the past. And Duggan in the past has been given the freedom to come out the field into the middle third. Whereas this year, she is their target woman. She does not come outside of that D. And that suits Leah Caffrey down to the ground. But in saying that, Emma Duggan is still going to win ball. She's still going to get a couple of points. But for me, that's probably that'll be the most entertaining battle to watch.
Okay, it's so intricate. I love those little tactical battles. Like, broadly speaking, to end on a double barrel question, Journalism 101, not to do, but are we going to see an entertaining, somewhat open game of football? And also, ultimately, who's going to prevail?
I don't think it's going to be open, Shane. I think it's going to be tentative because I think Meath are going to go defensive. And with that, you could see Dublin kind of naturally then dropping back defensively. They're two very well-conditioned teams who like to play on the break. I feel it'll be more interesting than entertaining. But it is definitely, look, it is going to be a great day in there. And we need a good game, Shane. You know what? Me and you have sat here in the trenches on a Monday trying to pick out, you know, highlights earlier in the
year,
especially.
There will be highlights.
But there will be, absolutely. And listen, I mean, the names that I've listed there, I mean, that's worth the fee in alone. And we haven't even gone on to Hannah Turrell, Carla Rowe, Kate Sullivan. You know, there's so many players there who we've left out. But, and I think for me, and I've said it, you know, I fancy Dublin. I think if Meath have the potential, they absolutely have the potential to beat Dublin. Meath have the potential to beat anybody on their day. But I think for that to happen, too many Dublin players are going to have a really off day, and I can't see that happening. And I think Dublin would have to have a psychological meltdown to lose this game, which I can't see happening again. But any team with Vicky Wall, I say it every week, any team with Vicky Wall, Emma Duggan, you can add Keira Smith to that. You know, they're always in with the shout.
Okay, you can listen to live commentary on RT Radio 1 Sunday Sports Show and at 4:15. And the Dean will be part of that panel on Sunday Sport. That one's at 4:15. 1:45, the intermediate final. Just in a sentence each here, Nadine, the Mary Quinn Memorial Cup up for grab and indeed Senior Championship Football in 2026 on offer. Leash against Tyrone. Who's going to win?
Yes, we've two teams, Shane, who have been up and down, I suppose, in the last few years. I probably fancy Tyrone. I feel they probably have a stronger forward line. They're, you know, they've great players in there, Niamh O'Neill and Circa Gormley, Aoife Horsk, you know, they're very impressive. So I fancy them. They've gone to extra time in a few of their games. They also played in Division 1 this year, Shane, which will definitely stand to them. But then you have Laois. They've good forwards in Mo Nerney, Emily Casey, their captain in the middle, Jane Murray. You know, if those girls have the games of their lives, then they're in with the shite. But I'd be surprised if Tyrone didn't make it back up to senior.
Okay, and very briefly, quarter 12, an early start junior final, Antrim against Louth.
Yeah, I was just looking up. These two teams have won. They're both going for their fourth junior title. And in itself, I feel there's probably something a bit wrong with that. You know, you were talking there about Premier League and Division 1 in the football. But Antrim are probably slight favourites. I think they're unbeaten this year, Shane, across all competitions. And they've been really impressive. Obviously won Ulster. But Louth have a fantastic forward in Kate Flood. And on her day, she's very hard to stop. And in junior football, you know, if you have one or two handy forwards, you're always in with the shout. But I think, yeah, it could be an Ulster win, a double Ulster. For the junior and intermediate.
Oh, okay, good stuff, Nadine. More from Nadine on Sunday Sport, and you'll be back with us on the bank holiday Monday.
Absolutely.
Alongside Alan Colley and plenty more besides to reflect on the weekend. For now, Nadine Doherty, thanks so much for joining us this evening.
Game on.
Racing.
But moving on to racing, Don McLean joins us now because Thurles Racecourse, Ireland's only privately owned racecourse, has closed with immediate effect. Rena Maloney officially announced the decision today, with the Maloney family having owned the Tipperary track for over a century. One of three racecourses in County Tipperary, Thurles hosted its first meeting way back 1732. And the track is renowned in national hunt circles for its ability to cope with heavy rain in stage cards and depths of winter. Don McLean, just how big a blow is this to racing in Ireland?
Yeah, it's not good news, Shane. The closure of any race course, it's never good. And it seems that this was a bit of a shock to most people. But look, as you said, the Maloney family, they've been deeply involved in racing and Thurles Racecourse for years, for generations. And the family, after Pierce's death, they kept it going and they kept racing there. And the thing about Thurles was the terrain, the ground at the track, it always was raceable. Even in the depths of winter, when everywhere else would be heavy ground or waterlogged or barely raceable, you could always race in Thurles. Like they used to say before Dundalk was built, they used to say that it was Ireland's only all-weather track. So look, it's a shame, down to 25 race courses now all over the country. And yeah, look, it's not good news for racing. And all I suppose the one of the big attractions of Irish racing, or racing in these parts of the world, is the diversity and the differences between the different courses and the lack of homogeneity among racing. And Thurles is one of those tracks. It was quite a unique track, but they've drawn stumps, and yeah, no, it's a pity.
No, it most certainly is a pity. Don, the feature today, 25-7, the Guinness Handicap at Galway. How did that one end?
Thrillingly, Shane. Yeah, it was some finish now. Nan's You got up on the line, Jarlath Fahey's mare under Lee Roach, and it was a race that didn't change for much of the way around. The leader was on the front end from early, and she just sat just up on the outside with Cheeky Wink in behind. Cheeky Wink kind of tracked the pace that Cloudseeker set, and Nan's You, when they turned for home, Nan's You and Cloudseeker, they went on together. She got the better of him. Then Cheeky Wink came at her, and she just had enough in reserve to get home by about a neck or a head in the end from Cheeky Wink. Acapulco Bay, he finished off well to take third. Fleetfoot finished off well to take fourth place. But Nan's You, she's a really game mare, Shane. She ran really well last time at Navan. That was her first run back after a break, and trained by Jarlath Fahey. I think she was Jarlath Fahey's first runner for the week at Galway. It might be his only runner for the week at Galway, but no, she was very good. Fine ride by Lee Roach as well, and she's bagged the feature, big price.
Okay, we're a bit stuck for timeline. Just briefly, what should we be looking forward to over the weekend at Galway?
Yeah, look, into day six tomorrow, the Boys Sports Handicap Hurdle, that's the feature race. You've got Teed Up back in here, and he just loves Galway. We saw there just the other day on Wednesday, I think it was, when he won the handicap, Emmett Mullins' horse. He stumbled quite badly on the run around the home turn. Ronan Whelan, who rode him, did really well to keep, well, to stay on board for starters, and then to keep his momentum up, and he stayed on up the hill. That's his sixth win at Galway. He's just an incredible horse, and he's back now in a listed handicap hurdle. So he's, you know, a flat hurdle. It doesn't seem to matter to him. I suppose his main danger would be winning Smut as one of them. He kept on to finish second behind Greatness Away to Killarney the last day, over 2 miles and 7. I think the stiffer track will suit winning Smut. He's a horse, Gordon Elliott's horse, who could probably go out and trip in time. He'll get 3 miles and maybe even further. And teed up will also face a challenge from his stable companion, So Scottish, who finished second in this race last year behind the Wall Park, another horse of Gordon Elliott's, who went on and finished third in the Stairs Hurdle. So that was a massive run. That was So Scottish's first run at Galway and back in here off the same mark of 129. Yeah, he could be maybe the one to look out for there.
Okay, brilliant stuff. Don, thank you for joining us this evening and indeed your company throughout the week. Just before we go, some news in hockey actually in the last hour or so. The Ireland men's hockey team have beaten Scotland 3-1 in their semi-final of the Tier 2 European Championships in Portugal. Victory secures qualification for the World Cup qualifiers and it also earns promotion to the top tier of the Euro Hockey Championships in 2027. That is all we have time for. Big thanks to this evening's producer Adrian Eames. Laura Lee Davis was our broadcast coordinator. We're taking a short break, checking in with the news desk, and then Blunt and Tracy will take you through the official chart show as is tradition of a Friday. Game On is back on the bank holiday, 6 o'clock. We have Nadine Doherty, we have Alan Colley, we have Stephen Ferris, we have plenty more besides and plenty of debate. Have a great weekend from all of us here at Game On. It is bye bye.
This is 2FM.